rain is not as near as big a factor as wind.
Wizardry and sorcery and dragons, all that stuff is not my deal. The Game of Thrones.
Welcome back.
The red light is on.
Game of Thrones podcast. Aaron Falk, Lynn Worthy, Christopher Kamrani, the Salt Lake Tribune. Another week.
Like the Utes.
What up?
We are at 500, always average.
Keeping it 500.
Keeping it 500. flies up.
Utes coming off a loss to the Washington State Cougars. Luke Falk sets the Pac-12 touchdown record. And, you know, all of the same questions exist as they did a week ago.
All year, man.
All year. Let's just start with the game. Just real quick, you know, pros and cons, upsides and downsides. Anything that you liked coming off out of that loss? Any positive signs for the Utes of Utah?
They played really well defensively, down like seven dudes on short fields pretty much the whole night against one of the most prolific offenses in the country, so that's a positive. But again, I don't know how sustainable that is going forward. I think if a lot of those guys that can't, if they can't play again this week, I think it's going to be a tough ask to replicate that sort of performance on the road at Washington against a team that's going to be pissed off having seen their college football playoff hopes go down the drain last week. For me, that's about it. Young guys stepped up. That offensively, seven turnovers, sloppy. Started from the second drive, Damari Simpkins fumbles it, and then from then on it was just a comedy of fumbles and interceptions.
I had a friend online who was like, who was a Ute fan, who was like, I miss when our drives ended in field goals, and then I miss... And then they
three and outs.
Get a safety, and he goes, I miss when our drives ended in turnovers. Like, it got rough, but they were still in it despite a lot of those early turnovers, they were in it going into second quarter,
halftime.
No, they
had two shots under 2 minutes to tie it up. I mean, hopes were slim, but they needed to drive 90-something yards twice and second time without any timeouts. But, yeah, glass half full, they had a shot. But how many times are you going to play a game where you turn the ball over seven times and have a shot twice at the end? Probably 1 in 100. And that's just me throwing out two random numbers.
Lynn, any positives for you? And then obviously, you know, outside of turnovers, what's your biggest concern? Two games left.
I wouldn't say positive. I'd say...
Lynn's the cynic now, guys.
Potentially a positive if you really try hard and wish and hope is the fact that the offense actually had some success. It's hard to say success, but like they didn't. It wasn't like they just got totally shut down. They gave the ball away, and they gave the ball away regularly, and you can't win doing that. But they also, you know, they threw for 300 yards. I mean, they scored some points. I mean, against a defense that's top 10 in the country, the offense didn't look horrible. It's just, you just can't keep giving the ball away. So you say, well, without Darren Carrington on the field, you threw for 300 yards. You'd be like, hey, I didn't expect to see that. But you also threw four interceptions, fumbled it three times. Hercules Mata'afa was in the backfield almost as much as Zach Moss. I mean, so it's not like you could say, oh, they played really well. They just turned it over. It's like, no. They had their issues, but if they didn't have those turnovers, they still might have been able to overcome some of those issues against the top 10 defense. So if you're looking for positive, then you say, okay, it wasn't just a showing where you come out there and say, what the heck was that? You had no plan or no, just no direction on offense. It wasn't that. It was just inconsistency and turnovers that sort of, you know, messed up what you could have probably found some bright spots in there if not for those things.
So once the season starts, you guys get sort of rotating access to coordinators, to assistants. You got Troy Taylor this week. What were your big takeaways talking with the offensive coordinator this week, Lynn?
I think the big thing was just that he sort of acknowledged that they're still trying to figure some things out in terms of just, you know, like getting more comfortable with or figuring out what works for, you know, the offensive line, trying to get some consistency in different areas, whether that's with, you know, the quarterbacks, because you had the quarterback change in the middle of the season. And even he said he feels like Tyler has tons of room for growth. And it wasn't a negative thing, or like you said, he had a lot of room for improvement. You hear a lot of room for improvement, and you think, oh, he's saying that the guy's got a long way to go. I think he's just really saying more that he sees a high ceiling for this kid, and he sees, you know, especially with the sort of almost a restart because of the injury, 3 weeks off where he really didn't do anything, and then jumping back into the season, he feels like, you know, the kid has strides that he can definitely reach. I think it's just overall, from that discussion, it's just the idea that the offense, they see things that they like, but it's still just a work in progress because of whether it be injuries or new people. I mean, four new guys on the line, new quarterback, new starting running back. I mean, and a new offense altogether. So, I mean.
And no Darren Carrington.
Yeah. So, I mean, and obviously they acknowledge there's certain things, like whether it's the red zone, or turnovers in this last game that they, you know, you can't have. But at the same time, I think they feel like they've made progress, just clearly not enough.
So outside of the bowl eligibility question, well, actually, let's start there. Kirk Crackthorpe, our columnist, basically says, if they get bowl eligible, a lot will be forgiven. Nate, that, you know, this season won't feel maybe as bad as it does right now. Do you agree with that at this point?
I do, because I think we gave this team the benefit of the doubt in fall camp going into the season, just because you kind of have to with how well this team performed over the last few years. They get into bowl games, and it's kind of a given. But I think it can't be understated the amount of change that they had to face, especially losing so many guys to the NFL. I mean, that's something that I feel like really hasn't gone under the radar necessarily, but you lost
it stopped being a talking
so
point
many guys.
After,
right.
Know,
I mean, you put an August. Entire offensive line into the NFL. That's pretty phenomenal. And you lose some really good guys on defense. And for a program like Utah, that's great. That woos recruits, but at the same time, it's not a tremendously deep team at a lot of important positions. So you look at that, couple that with changing the identity. This was like a revolutionary year for Kyle Whittingham. He took a big step. He took a big risk in changing things up for the first time in a very long time. They were this pseudo-spread team before, but not really. I mean, Devontae Booker and Joe Williams were getting the ball 30 times a game. Let's be honest. This year, it's night and day compared to what they have been. There were going to be growing pains. I think a lot of people assumed that they would get it figured out. And who knows? If Tyler doesn't get hurt in Arizona and they stay in that rhythm, maybe they win two of the games that they dropped. Maybe they don't lay an egg against ASU. Maybe they sneak out USC. Maybe they upset – or maybe they beat Stanford or they upset USC. These are just little things along the way. But again, hindsight's 20/20. If they can get to a bowl game, it's a win considering, you know, the changeover, the new blood, the new system, losing so many important dudes, and basically the fact that they've been down so many good players the last few weeks. So many good players. So many important players. I mean, starting with Jordan Agassiva against ASU, he was kind of the first domino, and it's just continued. You lose Marquise Blair, you lose Chase Hansen, you lose Darren Carrington, you lose Sunia Tautioli, you lose Kylie Fitz, you lose Casey Hughes. And these are some spots that you can say, you know, we have depth to step in, but not a lot. I mean, Darren, you're not going to replace Darren Carrington. And that kind of goes back to the conversation we had a few weeks ago. It's like, if this offense is going to work, Troy's got to find guys at several different positions where if the top dude's out, the next guy can step up and pretty much fill that spot. And if Kyle even said after the game Zach Moss was dinged up, if Zach Moss is out, who's going to step up and be the running back? I mean, Jordan Howard's he's a senior. He did okay a couple games last year, but these are little things I think when you look at Troy Taylor building what his identity is going to be, they have to just get deeper at every position offensively.
Do you
rant over?
That was beautiful, man.
I know.
That was Academy that was the Award podcast. Winning. We're just going to run that. You know, tons of questions about Troy Taylor still. His readiness for this role and this at this level. But Lynn, I mean, you mentioned the offense looking better in that game. Are you seeing signs of encouragement? I mean, are you seeing, like, does it feel like there's a chance Troy Taylor's going to be back next year and you know, that there's hope that this is kind of trending in the right direction, even if it's slower than people would have hoped for at the beginning of the season?
Well, just to clarify, I'm not sure if I said the offense looked better. It just didn't look bad.
Well, it had
even
bad.
Then, and even then, I'm not gonna say it didn't look bad. It didn't look as bad as you thought it might. Like
it didn't look if you ASU go
back,
bad.
Yeah, I was gonna say if you go back to that ASU game, coming out of there, and you're like, we're gonna play a top 10 defense in a couple weeks. You did not expect that you were gonna have even the success you had this past week. So. It didn't look as bad as you thought it might have at different points when you saw Tyler Huntley struggling and the offense was just so. And especially if you realized you were going to take Darren Carrington out of that picture. That being said, I don't know. I mean, with actually, I think I had this conversation with Kurt Cragthorpe yesterday talking about whether or not Troy comes back. And I think at one point he's like, oh, well, you know, considering the situation, you figure it would be a shock if he didn't come back. And I said, Kurt, you can't say shock. I said, if you say shock, I'm throwing the challenge flag because it's 9 and 10 years.
That's an ineligible receiver downfield right there.
There's no way you can
Kurt.
Say shocked. But that being said, I would think it would be more encouraging if he stays and you look at the continuity that you would have. Even without Darren Carrington, you have the quarterback coming back, second year in the system with his quarterback coach. You have an offensive line that, for the most part, will come back. You'll have, you know, not Darren Carrington, but the rest of the receivers. You'll have, you know, your backfield. I mean, you'll have, you know,
Britain's
potentially,
back,
you know, potentially 8-9 starters or guys who have, you know, started at times coming back next year with a year of experience with that offensive line, having gotten to work with, you know, Jim Harding for, you know, a full year now. So I feel like you would feel like there'd be more optimism about the continuity if you bring Taylor back and bring these guys back, especially if they get to the bowl game. I think the bowl game, and you heard Witt, you heard Taylor, you heard even Tyler Huntley talk about the idea of if they get to a bowl game and those practices leading up to that, almost like another spring ball, would be really important for them as a group. And Tyler pointed out even just the fact that he said, we didn't have that many practices in the preseason with me as the number one, Tyler said, because, I mean, if you think about it, there was that competition. It was really a week.
10 days.
Before the first game week where they named him the starter. And he's like, yeah, so if we have, you know, those weeks with me as a starter, getting the one reps with the offense sort of healthy and then going into spring ball, like, I think continuity would be the best thing going for them if you bring Taylor back. If you just switch things up again, I don't know. I don't know if that really helps you. I mean, I guess change for change's sake, and then, you know, there'll be people, oh, there's a new guy coming in, just like sort of like with Taylor. There's a new guy coming in, so there's going to be – you're going to start doing this, and this is going to be different. Like, well, you just did that, so I don't know what you gained.
He'll be back. I mean, they've looked bad at times, but they've looked really bad in previous years offensively. I mean, I can't think of – another year where they had their quarterback completing 65% of his passes, especially a dude who's getting hit as much as Tyler is. I know, I mean, some of those are your RPOs or your design runs, but the fact that this kid, in a first-year starter, 65% of his passes is pretty good. I mean, Travis Wilson I don't think was ever close to that. I know Troy wasn't last year. So there's room to grow, and you have weapons. I mean, losing Darren, I mean, that's such a complex one-off situation. Why being able to add him and losing him, that sucks for them. But they just got to get more talent offensively. Yeah. And they have to protect Tyler, and Tyler has to throw it earlier so his offensive linemen don't get flagged for the same penalty 5 times a game.
And I was going to say the shoot, I just lost it there too.
Find it, man.
Bumble.
Find
totally,
it.
Totally lost.
Gotta go to the gym. Gotta go to the booth. Media timeout.
In terms of, I mean, I think looking at the schedule, the Colorado game is the game probably everybody is, you know, if this is going to happen, that's the game I think most people would anticipate.
Yeah.
Are there any, I mean, you shake your head. I know. But
you're asking us for odds in Husky Stadium?
Yeah. Miracle.
You're trying to promote Pac-12 after dark? Is that what you're doing?
Man.
Chris Peterson ain't.
It'll be tough. It'll be tough. That team's really good. They've underperformed. I think the worst thing for Utah, to be honest, is the fact that they're facing Washington after a loss. They went into Stanford and won and had all this stuff going for them. Yeah, but no. Could have been that cliche of looking ahead to the rivalry game, building up to the Pac-12 North Championship, blah, blah, blah. They're going to be mad. And they're good. They're really, really good. I mean, they're a top four defense pretty much in every stat now. They were the number one defense before Bryce Love got them in the second half of that game, but they're really good. And sure, Utah did a great job against Washington State, but again, you're not going to have – I mean, if they go up there and turn the ball over seven times, they will not – I promise you, they will not have two chances with less than 2 minutes to go in the game to tie it up. And if they do, I'll quit my job.
You're just looking for an excuse to quit your job.
Well,
I would say also the Washington defense, I mentioned the Washington State defense, top 10 defense. Washington defense, like a top 3 defense with dudes who just, I mean, they got some dudes, all right? They got some dudes on that D. I think the only chance, if you want to give them a chance, we want to get a little optimism there, is basically you got to have one of those traditional wit era games where you run the ball, you don't turn it over, you just shut them down with defense. That's the way that would have to happen, is you'd have to be able to just shut them down defensively, probably have to, shut down the running game and get some pressure on the quarterback, which we still haven't seen a whole lot of. And you probably just have to, control the clock. Control the line of scrimmage both sides and don't turn it over. And don't
That's a lot to ask.
I wasn't done yet too.
Okay, keep going.
I was gonna add was, and then you have to
make sure Dante Pettis doesn't have
exactly.
Okay.
The special teams. You gotta control your boy Pettis. And then so if you can do all of that on the road, then you got a chance.
Well, and I mean Jake
Colorado.
the Ralphies. Jake Browning threw 43 touchdowns last year. He's thrown 16 this year. It's not a down year for him, but their passing offense, the throw game, is not nearly what it was last year. Myles Gaskin has still already run for 1,000 yards. He's only the third running back in program history to have three straight 1,000-yard rushing games or rushing seasons. And he's the type of dude that smokes Utah. Every run is to the outside. So that's another problem, is you have Gaskin who can absolutely get to the outside where Utah's been bad this year, and then they have this big dude, Coleman, who will just start bowling over. It's kind of like Oregon, but they can throw the ball.
What you trying to say?
Colorado.
Any insight from the Troy Taylor, Jake Browning connection? You're writing about that, right, Lynn?
Yes, I am. Well, actually, and the one thing that I you usually figure on those types of weeks that they're going to be, hope he does well, just not this week, that sort of stuff. But I didn't realize that they still talk regularly, like to the point where Troy was saying that he was expecting to try and get a hold of him like yesterday, like even during game week they're still. And he said, because you remember now that Taylor had coached him since he was like 10, not just high school, like youth, as because he was doing the quarterback coaching thing. So he had him basically from when he was 10 all the way up through high school. They still in contact regularly. He said he's basically like a member of the family. But you could tell just from talking to Troy a little bit just how different he feels like Jake was. Like he could tell, he said sophomore year, whether it was the way he sees the game, like stuff that he was telling the story about. There was a game where there was a play that, he's like, Jake, why didn't you throw this route? And he gave him this detailed explanation of, where the referee was, where the timing of this, where that guy was, and the pressure that was coming this way. And Troy's just like, okay. And he always, I guess apparently he always watches the game right after the game. He'll go back and watch the tape. And so he's thinking, this kid's full of it. And then he goes back and looks at the tape, and he said, it was exactly as the kid said. And he said, most people don't see it that way, including himself as a quarterback, didn't see it that way. So he really, you could tell, believes that Jake Browning is something special, and they still keep a friendship. And that's the way he said it, too, his friendship, not just they were, you know, as a younger kid who he coached and sort of like, you know, you think maybe a father figure type role. He said, no, it's, you know, a friendship type thing that they still keep up to this day. So,
with the injuries, you know, who obviously tough task no matter what, but who do they miss the most this weekend, do you think? Carrington.
If Carrington can't. Yeah, I guess I would say always, just because of the defense. Carrington? Yeah, because of the defense that they're going against, and because even though, I mean, but then again, I mean, you know, like I said earlier, they threw the ball around fairly well last week. I mean, I guess I would say Carrington, but
Chase maybe.
I'm not sure who you're going to have on that line, because, I mean, if you get Agassiva back, or if you don't have Agassiva, and then there were some other guys who got banged up, you know, in the last couple of weeks on the line. If you've got sort of a revolving door at that right guard spot against this defensive front, and that might not go so well. So, I mean, there's so many guys to pick from, but I guess it would probably be Carrington or that right guard spot, just because you're going to have to control the ball with your offense against this team, or else it's just not going to happen.
I say Darren just because he's the guy that can get you a touchdown. And in this game, you will probably need a guy that can get you a touchdown every time he touches
couple
the ball.
Touchdowns.
A couple touchdowns, yeah.
And then just the fact that the defense played really well this past week with, you know, the MASH unit out there, because you had so many guys out, and then guys that went out during the course of that game. I mean, it's going to be hard to say that you can count on that again this week, but, I mean, you can count on something, you know, maybe even if it's, you know, 75% of that. But if the offense can hold up better than it did last week and not keep giving the ball away, then 75% might put you in the game.
Chris, you're going to Seattle?
Friday morning.
You can catch a fish.
Catch fish like an idiot.
In the market.
Like an idiot, I try to get there early, and then I realize that you can't even check into your hotel till like 2 p.m. Sometimes, I'm not like you, man. I don't have that baller Marriott status. So I just get there early, and then I'm like, all right, I'll just walk around for 5 hours, listen to a podcast, like a total hipster. But it'll be fine. Weather's going to be okay. It's supposed to rain Saturday night a little bit. Friday's supposed to be good. Game will get over at midnight. I'll get back to my hotel at 1, get up at 5 for a 7 a.m. flight. Nobody knows that more than you, man.
It's beautiful.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be half awake.
Lynn.
The opposite of woke.
Stay in bed.
I will be very much rested.
Lynn's not on the injury report.
Very much rested.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, guys. We will be back next week.
One more time.
Una más. Catch you later. Bye.